On September 1, 1939, Nazi Germany invaded Poland. On September 3rd, Great Britain declared war on Germany, and World War II began. Later that month, on September 29th, on the Feast of St. Michael in the Anglican Church, the Michael's Mass term began at Oxford University. Term? Studies? Classes? Reading? Learning? In wartime? This is the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. Academics at Wyoming Catholic College focuses on the great books of the liberal arts tradition, a tradition stretching back beyond the founding of Oxford University in 1096, and the colleges at Oxford in 1939 were almost exclusively liberal arts. What was the point of reading Homer, Herodotus, and Dante, studying Euclid and Newton, perfecting an understanding of Latin and Greek verbs, with a war going on? On Sunday, October 22, 1939, at St. Mary the Virgin Church in Oxford, literary scholar and Oxford Don C.S. Lewis stepped into the pulpit to answer that question. His sermon, Learning in Wartime, has become something of a classic, and Dr. Jason Baxter studied that sermon earlier this month with high school students who attended Wyoming Catholic College's PEAK program. Dr. Baxter, to take a question from Lewis's sermon, why should we, indeed how can we, continue to take an interest in these placid occupations of the liberal arts when the lives of our friends and the liberties of Europe are in the balance? Is it not like fiddling while Rome burns? How does Lewis approach that question?
I think it's a powerful, pressing question in our day. And I think in a technological culture in which our media is always on and is always on us, and there's a 24/7 media assault at all times, we tend to think about one issue at a time. And we tend to feel that that's the only important issue, whether or not it's questions of justice or questions of order or questions of the pandemic. We are made to sort of throb and pulse with these one issues. And it's what the sociologist Zygmunt Bauman refers in part to as liquid modernity. And so when I was teaching through this recently with my students, I made a point which I think really struck them, that said, look, do you think that we're going, once COVID-19 is over, things are going to return to normal? The fact is, from now on, forever, we're always going to be in a crisis. We're going to move from crisis to crisis. History is just going to throb and pulse, and we're going to be made to think about one thing at a time. And as Lewis says, if you don't have the fortitude and indeed the love and the desire to begin to try to become wise now in the midst of these unfavored conditions, then you never will begin.
Well, Lewis says, the war creates no absolutely new situation. It simply aggravates the permanent human condition so that we can no longer ignore it. And right. Which is really what you're getting at.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I mean, there's so many reasons to think about. I mean, how can you give time to study? Well, one of Lewis's answers is, look, it's never not going to be like this. Mm-hmm. You're going to give time to ennoblement and personal development at some point in your life or never. And if at some point, might as well begin now because the crisis is not going away. I think Lewis got clearer on this a decade after this piece, his Learning in Wartime, which is, you know, written in 1939, right after the invasion of Germany and Poland. A decade after this, when he writes his Cambridge address, he realized that sort of crisis mentality had become a permanent feature of modern government and what he jokingly calls governitismant, that is sort of government by advertisement or government by propaganda, that there's a sort of constant pushing, it's constant speeding up, constant sort of amplifying of news cycles and campaigns and all these kinds of things, right? But I think, I mean, look, there's so many things to talk about, how we can pursue these, why we should pursue studies, how we can pursue them. But I think at least just one very simple one is study is in part aimed at holding in the mind multiple truths simultaneously. study is the goal of holding multiple truths in the mind simultaneously. Again, when I was recently teaching this, I jokingly said to my students, imagine that there are 23 truths, 23 important virtues that you need to acquire in order to be a full human being. It seems to me that each historical age is good by disposition at two or three of those virtues. And when the next generation comes along, it gets two or three new virtues, and in the meantime, it accuses the previous generations of not possessing them very well. Such that in my mind, sort of history is this constant carousel in which we're moving, we really are getting better every age, and we really are getting worse every age. We're just forgetting. As much as we learn, we also forget. And I encourage my students that part of the virtue, part of the goal of education, of liberal education, is to try to hold all of these virtues in mind simultaneously, to love all of these different things, not just the two or three virtues which come naturally to your age, or the vices which you now have a visceral contempt for. I think that's a really important reason to study. And look, we need virologists, and we need epidemiologists, and we need economists to run models and to talk about these questions and to think about public health. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But we also need to remember that there are other important things and other virtues which need to be held in mind simultaneously. And I think left to ourselves as human beings, but particularly as modern human beings, we're not very good at that.
Mm-hmm. Reminds me of another Lewis essay, his essay about why read old books.
Right.
We can easily look back, say, at Jane Austen and make fun of the way people courted at that time. But how does Jane Austen critique the way we court today?
Absolutely.
And what can we learn?
We'll go with your Jane Austen example. I mean, maybe in the Jane Austen world, maybe the characters are a little bit too stuffy. But in the meantime, in our world, intimacy has almost completely disappeared. At least that's what young people, non-religious young people, report. I mean, there's probably a reason we're still watching Jane Austen films, because even though we're not willing to adopt those manners and some of those virtues, we sort of half voyeuristically crave that kind of depth, that kind of soul-to-soul contact. So I think that's a great example. We might have, I don't know, at some point in our history, we might have overprivileged manners. We might have mistaken manners for virtue. We might have mistaken manners for depth of being. But as it turns out, the sort of a sort of culture which imposes a little bit of form on our lives creates the possibility for more difficult and fragile relationships like intimacy and deep friendship, which our world has a really difficult time cultivating. So I think that's a great example. We could come up with, 45 other interesting examples, and we'd just be walking through the WCC curriculum.
Right, yeah. The courage of Aeneas, the piety of Aeneas. On and on it goes.
That's right,
yeah.
The holy dissatisfaction of Achilles, right? The pilgrim's wandering heart in the comedy. Yeah, we could keep going, couldn't we?
Yeah. Now, let me read one more Lewis quote from Learning at War in Wartime. As it is, a cultural life will exist outside the church, whether it exists inside or not. To be ignorant and simple now, not to be able to meet the enemies on their own ground, would be to throw down our weapons and betray our uneducated brethren, who have under God no defense but us, against the intellectual attacks of the heathen. Good philosophy must exist, if for no other reason, because bad philosophy needs to be answered. Would you comment on that?
Yes. It's not, maybe not even the most important reason to study that error exists, but it is at least an important reason to study, and that I think one of the most interesting things that Lewis identifies about modern culture, and he does this really well in the first book of Abolition of Man, is he makes a couple of interesting points. Point one, ancient education existed in order to inculcate just sentiments in the young. Point two, modern education exists in order to instill critical thinking skills, what he calls debunking myths, in the young. Point three, modern education, while preferring the second of those two, doesn't tell us that there is an alternative. I think maybe this is a human thing, maybe this is a particularly sort of modern thing, but we're not very good at presenting people with ideological, philosophical alternatives. And at least one of the important reasons for study is that our compatriots who don't have the desire or the opportunity for depth of education are not being presented with any alternatives. They're being screamed at, they're being scolded, electronically speaking. They're being told what they want. They're being told that if they don't want it, there's something wrong with them. And they're not told that there is an alternative. It's not a debate. It's not a conversation. I think at least one of the amazing things that we can do is just present people with an alternative. This is a legitimate conversation. It's a legitimate debate. And here are the alternatives, and here are the reasons why. I think Lewis is brilliant on that.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did the Peake students take Lewis's sermon, particularly in light of COVID, demonstrations, tearing down statues, and seeking to obliterate history, and so on and so on?
Yeah, I think they loved it. I think in particular they were really moved by this concept, this kind of, I think, a kind of complementary concept that I've been using from Bauman of liquid modernity. Because I think they're all sort of hoping, oh, hopefully this will be over soon. Hopefully this will be over soon. And if I'm even, 47% right, that it won't be over soon. Something new will come along and...
Yeah, this will be over soon, but something new will pop up to take its place.
Yeah, we're going to keep your nervous system anxious for the rest of your life. That was really eye-opening to them and appropriately sort of disturbing. But I think all of a sudden when you start thinking about that, it gives you a sense of freedom, which you think, well, fine, then I'll seek virtue now. If I'm not going to wait for the opportune day, I'll begin now.
If you have never read C.S. Lewis's Learning in Wartime, let me recommend it to you. You can find the PDF online, print it, sit down, pen in hand, maybe with a cup of coffee, to think through the questions Lewis raised and the answers that he makes. We are constantly under the shadow of one threat or another, one crisis or the next. Thus it has been since the fall, and thus it will be until Christ's return. And while in our video-driven age, it's easy for our attention to bounce from one disaster to another disaster, it may be, and I believe it is, far more important to read and contemplate the great books, the great ideas, the great authors, as they direct our attention to the things that last, to the good, the true, and the beautiful. In that way, we'll be doing more for the good of our culture than we can imagine. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tunkwich.